What's up? Welcome to Bitcoin Center. My name's Cedric Jungelman.
Michelle Weekly, great to be here with you, Cedric.
Yeah, it's great. You're guest hosting for Paul Tarantino.
That's right. Who's off
gallivanting in Europe.
Running around the world, can't be bothered.
Well, what is he, fishing now in Sweden, and he's off to Amsterdam for the conference?
Yep, I think so.
All right, well, he's holding it down.
He's living it up.
Yeah, well, that's nice. You were just in Montreal. I saw you there.
Yeah, I was. I think the weather followed us home, didn't it?
Yeah, that's true. What'd you talk about in Montreal?
Bitcoin security, physical security, you know, self-custody versus ETFs, all that kind of stuff.
And what do you think, sort of, how'd that go over in today's ETF world? I mean, there's a pretty good crowd in Montreal.
Yeah, it's a great event. I love the Bitcoin crew up there. I think it's an interesting time that we're in. You know, there's a lot of people that are in Bitcoin now who, this is not a popular take, but I think there's a lot of people who shouldn't be self-custodying yet. You know, you got to be careful. You got to really fully understand what you're doing. And I think what I said up there was that it is for anyone when you're ready, but it's not for everyone, right? Like, you've really got to make sure that you know what you're doing before you take full control.
Yeah. I want to ask you about Trump.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, what, 11, 10 months into the... I'm going to start, though. Do you think... And can you hear me?
I can hear you, yep.
All right. Do you think that, you know, the Trump regime... I think the Trump regime wants crypto to be a big part of their sort of economic future and plan.
Yeah, totally.
It's good for them if Bitcoin goes up, if stablecoins get adopted. Do you think, on the other hand, though, a lot of people think that somehow, some way, the paper Bitcoin or futures, or, you know, that Bitcoin might be being suppressed in price. Maybe it's not.
Yeah.
But no, my question is it possible America's or Trump's enemies, the Trump regime's enemies, are holding the price down, like China or Russia?
Oh, anything is possible. I think China, you know, I love blaming China. That would be really within China's wheelhouse, that they would be suppressing price in order to accumulate. But I have to say, I don't think that that's what's happening now, because I think China's been accumulating since they did the ban. I have believed that ban was sort of fake, and that they were banning retail, but they were actually at that point in time starting to acquire. So I think there's definitely shenanigans going on behind the scenes, but you never know what the details are.
So China still has the most mining in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think like they killed the quote unquote like commercial mining and then captured the assets and or bought their own, and they are behind the large amount of hash rate in China right now?
Absolutely. China is ruthless. And I think there's no doubt in my mind that that's what they did. I've been there. I've done business there. I've spent a lot of time there. Not that that makes me an expert per se, but absolutely, that's what they've been doing.
Did you see Trump in the Oval Office with the gold show?
I just saw it at the last minute with the gold, and apparently they gave him a Rolex or something.
Yeah. So he redid the Oval Office, and then I forget who he was in there with, and she was like, "So this is not from Home Depot." He's like, "No, you." What was very interesting to me, one, he said, you can't fake gold. And I'm like, well, I don't know. That's not true.
Right. But where's the audit of Fort Knox?
Right. But I think, you know, kind of revealing that during the end of the government shutdown, don't you mm-hmm. think that's just really, I don't know.
Not the best timing.
Not the best look.
I think if he has, I mean, obviously he has faults, right? But his biggest fault, in my opinion, is his ego. Like, he just loves to be the center of attention. He loves to be praised. He loves to show off. And I don't think he cares one bit about the timing of it. You know, you could ask him and he'd probably laugh.
Do you think he cares about any of the details? Do you think he's actually calling any real shots at, you know, Or is he just taking advice from the people that tell him what to do?
I don't know. It's tough. You know, I was really an advocate for Trump. And so it's a weird, I'm
so what
sort
would
of
you grade him then?
Huh?
What would you grade him based on what you were hoping for?
This is tough. Okay. So if you ask me based on what I was hoping for, I would give him an F, but we have to take a step back and look at what was the alternative, right? If it hadn't been him, I fully believe we'd be living under communism. We might not be talking. They might have banned all the Bitcoin channels on YouTube. I probably would have lost my job. Like, we'd be living in a totally different world. So it's tough, you know.
I think he's installed for all the financial surveillance as part of the stable coins and the crypto. I think even like the stimulus checks that they're proposing now, I think if Kamala is in power, I don't think the right would accept that proposition.
Right.
And I think with Trump, you know, like, I think he'll get away with certain aspects of inflation that the left wouldn't. And then there'll be aspects of austerity with Trump that the left couldn't get away with, that will be reversed when the pendulum swings back with more money print. You know what I mean?
Right. There's always money printing no matter what. I mean, nobody can argue that. But you think it's all just a show, don't you?
I do. I mean, yeah. I think that it's really would be impossible for any one person to kind of really game plan this all out or just figure it all out and come in fresh and have the current, you know, so I think there's sort of a playbook that they can choose from, which issues they want to spearhead, what they want to do first. You would think, like, why all the failures in the first 10 months if he actually wanted to be successful?
Yeah, I'm curious what you think about, for example, like Kash Patel, you know, so the failures, in my opinion, are result.
Like, Kash Patel, I think, is, and Bongino. I mean, these are like podcasters.
Right. But they come in hot, and then personally, I think they've all been blackmailed. Kash Patel is like a deer in headlights, and you know he hasn't done a single thing he said he was going to do. And you have to like look at past behavior. You have to look at like what they did with General Flynn. I mean, this is what they do. They threaten people, and so I think that's what's happening with a lot of them. I mean, I know that the politicians are like a big, you know, the expectations should be low, but I think that they had plans to do more and that they all got threatened by the deep state and the intel agencies and stuff.
So then you would say, then why not the courage to say that? Like, why doesn't anyone ever break ranks and say, you know what, I'm going to blow the whole thing up?
Well, they have.
Instead of being corrupted, captured person, I came into this with not knowing that would happen. Now they said this. Why don't I either just bow out? Or
are you familiar with Flynn? What they did to General Flynn?
No, not in detail. No.
So
that
he,
was a very confusing one because, you know, they painted him one way in public. I didn't follow up. No.
Yeah. So there's a documentary which premiered in Venice, Florida. By the way, Flynn is based down here. But Flynn came out. I mean, Flynn made a documentary about what they did to him. And what I think what happens is when people do try and speak of it, they get suppressed. Like, you
but
know,
he still speaks out against, right? I mean,
he made like a documentary about how the federal government, the Department of Justice, framed his son in order to get him to cooperate with Russiagate. And he came out and he speaks about it all the time. There's been a lot of.
Then, wouldn't you make the argument that any honest, good person would know this going in?
I don't know. I think people go in with, I mean, some do, but I think some of these, the people that we were like hoping would actually do something like Cash, I think they maybe underestimate the level to which they may end up threatened or.
I mean, but you literally had every one of them in there once. I mean, you have Cash, Bongino, Elon was there for a minute, Trump. I mean, it's they have the whole gang.
Yeah, but that's how it works. I mean, I lived in DC for 12, 13 years. These people are all, I don't know.
I'll say this. I'm not a Trump supporter. I never was. But yeah. I had optimism November through January.
Right.
And I don't anymore.
I know.
I was black then, and I was Tom Luongo. And he still thinks Trump's kicking ass here.
I don't agree with that. I'm super disappointed in the whole thing. But I'm torn because I don't think the answer is to say, oh, screw it, and just opt out, because then we end up getting ruled by these lunatics who are crazy enough to be involved, and then they're making the rules and laws and regulations and all that. You know what I mean? So it's, I don't know, it's really defeating. I admit that.
Which I think is part of this, the demoralization campaign. And I don't want to be a doomer. I am optimistic long term. I don't see a lot of cause for optimism in the political landscape, but the actions I'm seeing.
I don't disagree with that. I'm kind of a doomer, but I'm really optimistic about more local solutions. Like, I love Florida, and I think being involved locally matters. You know, we saw during COVID how important that is. And so I think that's going to become more and more important as things get further divided. So that is kind of what gives me hope. I think that's worth staying involved and engaged with.
Yeah, I hear you. I hope is great. Bitcoin is hope. You know, it's a term I hear more now, spot Bitcoin.
Ugh.
It's kind of right. It's kind of cringe. Why do you hate it?
It's just so fiat. You know what I mean? Like, all Bitcoin should be spot Bitcoin. Like, spot Bitcoin implies that there's something else, which there shouldn't be. But of course, now there is. You now have all of these products.
Yeah. But I think it's more about, I think it's sort of trying to indicate self-custody.
You think spot Bitcoin is the indicator of like having?
No, I'm saying, I think people are trying to colloquially say, like, buy spot Bitcoin, meaning they're trying to really, in a nutshell, say, buy it on an exchange and take it into self-custody. Right. First, buy the ETF or.
Sure.
You know, or a treasury company.
Yeah, and it's fair enough. And we do need those distinctions now post ETF sort of Bitcoin, I think, is in its like Wall Street era. So I guess we need those distinctions, but I miss the old days.
I mean, what do you think about, I mean, you voted for Trump. What do you think about the government embracing Bitcoin as much as it has? And again, maybe not in terms of maybe pumping the price or whatever, but just all of it, just rolling out the red carpet for Bitcoin and the crypto universe.
Yeah. I'm torn on this one too, right? Because we were in a position where they were really like coming after the entire industry. And there were some things that I saw, like from a regulatory perspective in my role at Byte, that we were aware that were happening behind the scenes, like agendas that they had at the DOJ with FinCEN, stuff like that. And it wasn't good. You know, we saw a lot of prosecutions, like with the Samurai Wallet guys, Tornado Cash, I know it's Ethereum, but there were a lot of these cases that were being brought, and I think there were going to be more and more of them.
That's a good point about Tornado, or however you say it. I mean,
yeah.
And Samurai. Which
right. So, and you know, you saw a lot of like Wallet of Satoshi, like all the wallets left because they were afraid to offer services to citizens in the US. And you know, I know some people cheer for that because they think it'll like expedite the end and the crash. But I think to think that that would all happen really quickly is I don't agree with that at all. It's like a 30 to 50 year period where we would be living under communism before we ultimately won. Right. So it's hard to say, oh, yeah, like let them come in, let them label us all criminals, let them take our jobs, let them kick the industry out. I don't, you know, I'm not excited about like working with the government. I mean, we started to get away from the government completely, but there's gotta be a happy medium where we don't all end up in jail.
Yeah, that's true. No one wants to go to jail.
No one wants to go to jail.
This is Bitcoin Center brought to you by Bite Federal. Go bank yourself. They got the point of sale, the crypto wallet, and the Bitcoin ATM, where you could buy spot Bitcoin and take it into self-custody or use their wallet. Let's get into the show.
All right.
Subscribe, chat. Let's get into the show. Can you roll the intro?
Let's be real, right? Praising Telegram for launching a Bitcoin wallet.
We'll get to soon.
I've always felt like Vitaly.
Bitcoin, this digital currency that's out there that people say, oh, it might be the next big thing. What do you think?
I think it's rat poison.
Bitcoin. You never heard of them a few weeks ago. Now everybody's talking about them. But is it a currency?
I don't know. Or is it more like a stock? Or is it a tulip bulb?
Or is
whatever
it just
debate that.
Stupid.
To me, it smells like Ponzi scheme and the greater fool theory, right?
If you do like 5 minutes of freaking research.
Well, good. Thanks for coming to my set talk.
Yes.
Don't buy Bitcoin.
Oh, man, I get that wrong. All right.
Bitcoin's recent rally.
Do you agree? Is crypto finally dead? Go to the next one.
Matter of fact, they're kind of in the Ethernet. What are they?
Some rumors that it's this Japanese guy, but others say no, that he's a fake name. It was a pseudonym.
You're literally putting real money onto a system that we don't even know who created it.
People come to a bad ending.
Is this the most exciting bull run ever?
Not for me. No, it's not.
Welcome to Bitcoin Center, the fast-paced show where the debate is the story.
It's nice to see you, sir, in person.
Good to see you as well.
Okay, so what's going on here? This is a big deal.
Yeah, this morning.
It's a big deal for you.
It is a very big deal. It's a big day and a big milestone. Reverses the course of time.
It does.
We've wanted to be a one-stop shop for all your financial services needs, and one of the holes we've had for the last 2 years was in cryptocurrency, the ability to buy, sell, and hold crypto. We were not allowed to do that as a bank. It was not permissible. But in March of this year, the OCC came out with an interpretive letter that it's now permissible for banks like SoFi to offer cryptocurrency. So this morning we're launching as the only national bank, the first and only national bank, the opportunity to buy, sell, and hold cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Solana.
So I was going to ask, are we just talking about three for now?
We'll expand well beyond three. It'll be a pretty broad assortment. We try to differentiate on being fast, having broad selection, great prices, ease of use. So we'll try to give members, SoFi members, as much selection as they would like.
And what's the difference between going through you and going through Coinbase or going through Robinhood or somebody else?
Yeah, there's a couple of really big differences. First, we're a nationally chartered bank, which means we have the infrastructure, the processes, the financial conditions that provides the safeguards that a consumer would expect from a bank, which is going to allow us to scale responsibly. The second thing is because we are a one-stop shop, you can do all your banking, checking and savings at SoFi, your borrowing and your investing, and now crypto. And one of the unique things about that is when you come to SoFi and fund your crypto investments, you'll fund them in a SoFi checking and savings account. That checking and savings account's deposits earn interest.
Say that again. You're going to fund it with crypto?
You're going to fund
your checking account.
You're going to fund your checking account with cash.
Okay.
And then when you buy Bitcoin or Solana or Ethereum, the money will come straight out of your checking and savings account. So when you're not putting cash to work, it's not sitting in an account that earns no interest, and it's not sitting in an account that's not insured. So the money will sit in an FDIC-insured account. Up to $2 million is what we offer. And when you buy, it will instantly withdraw from that account.
What's up, guys? So we lost Cedric. It's just me for right now, but we're waiting for Cedric to come back. In the meantime, what I was going to ask Cedric was, so SoFi has become the first nationally chartered bank to enable Bitcoin and crypto trading. So the question tonight is, how big of a deal is that, right? And I think it's a pretty big deal. I mean, I kind of hate it. Cedric and I were talking in the pre-show a little bit about this idea of spot thing, right? Like all Bitcoin should be spot Bitcoin. But I don't want to be a total doomer. Like, it's pretty cool that this is happening. I didn't even know the details about it. I was listening to the clip along with you guys. And so it sounds like if you have a SoFi account, you can just buy Bitcoin. Hey, Cedric, you're back.
Hey. Yeah, I'm on my laptop mic and my laptop camera, but can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
Okay, so, cool.
So Cedric made it back, and I was just trying to decide how I felt about SoFi, Cedric, but I think you're better qualified for this one. So SoFi has become the first nationally chartered bank to enable Bitcoin and crypto trading. How big of a, do you think that's a big deal? What do you think about that?
I think it is a big deal. I think this goes along the lines with the ETF. I think that people are, you know, for hundreds of years, we have used trusted third parties to manage a lot of our wealth. You can look at an institution like Fidelity. So I do think that this is crossing the line and the chasm of being more accepted. But if you notice, I was offline for the clip, but like they're talking about trading and they're talking about more than just Bitcoin. So I think that this is still about narrative building and getting people comfortable with stable coins. They want you to, put your, you talk a lot about, having your checking account, and that's going to be in stable coins. And you could buy, Bitcoin, crypto, and Ethereum. This is getting people comfortable with blockchain. So I still think that this is more about that than actual Bitcoin. But absolutely. I think in terms of adoption, in terms of, institutions, people trust amount of their wealth. And I think that also for collateral. So being able to borrow against your Bitcoin. I think it'd be better if you can have it in custody or self-custody and borrow against it. But I think the first phase is having it in a trusted third party and using it as collateral there.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I think that that's an awesome trend we're seeing. And also one thing that was interesting in the clip was that he talked about like putting your money to work so that it's not just sitting in an account. And I think what he said something about like instead of having your cash sit there, you would put it in the crypto. And so I think you're right that they're really like getting people, warming people up to the idea of not only moving in and out of crypto, but like trading and having their money work for them, which is really for the bank.
Right. And Bitcoin in self-custody is also implying it's not working for you.
Right.
And I think this is part of making it sound like gold, like a pet rock, a digital pet rock. All right, let's go on to the next one here. All right, Peter Schiff is back in the news. Peter Schiff insists as usual that Bitcoin's latest rally is an artificial bubble propped up by political and Wall Street support. Is Bitcoin lagging gold or is it the other way around?
You know what, Peter Schiff, it was nice to meet you in Vegas. You were at our event, right? Like,
Probably paid to be there.
You think they paid him to be there?
That's my guess. Yes, I think he might have even said something to the effect. I think they paid him to be there.
Well, nobody is, all right. I mean, he's still there, right? So he thinks it's worth his time. I mean, they couldn't have paid him that much. If
he had a booth there, he's selling his gold there.
Right. And so, I mean, what do we have? We have gold is like 25, 26 trillion market cap still. And Bitcoin is only 2 or 2.5. But I think ultimately that ends up flipped over what time frame. Is it a couple of years? Realistically, it's probably 5 to 10 years. Maybe it takes a little bit longer. Maybe it's more like 20. But I think in the future, we'll be sitting here and those will be completely flipped. And people will say, why would I hold gold? And the reality, which is maybe a little harsh, but a lot of people that are in gold, they're going to pass away one day. The people that are still holding in gold and really convicted about it. And as those people pass away, I mean, young people are not holding gold. There's no way that market is going to maintain itself.
Do you think that gold running this much is an indication that Bitcoin could still have a major rally here?
I do. I think, we've been in this crab market and I don't really think we've had a major, I don't think there's been a bull market at all, to be honest. Like, yeah, we're getting these little new all-time highs, but I'm waiting for the volatility to come back. Give me a big run up and then a huge crash.
Yeah, that'd be fun. All right, let's move on to the next one here.
it's that what is a security is we're trying to fit something into a wrong framework.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the crypto guys would say.
Because anybody can buy a house. If you say it's a property, everybody should be able to buy it.
Yeah, but Raul, if I created my own Mikey coin and then I pumped it on Twitter and I dumped it on the retail population after I gave a bunch to a celebrity who then told the world it was great, it's illegal.
Yeah.
And it's unethical. The truth of the matter is if you have a centralized group of people creating a token, which is a security, giving it to themselves and then selling it on the market and representing it as a decentralized property, you're crossing an ethical line and you're also crossing a legal line, and you can't avoid the ethical responsibility and the legal responsibility simply by saying.
Such a great clip. I'm so glad this is resurfacing. All it's missing is a deep sigh. But with this clip resurfacing, with Saylor talking about like the bad ethics in crypto, do you think it's resonating? Because he's showing that, like, where the line needs to be drawn, and that there is a voice of reason amid like all this questionable crypto politics, invested interest, or is it just kind of muddying the waters?
Well, I mean, I think there was a lot of great old Saylor clips and euphemisms and sort of guidelines that make a lot of sense, and I think what he's saying there is spot on. What I think about is how different is MicroStrategy from what he's describing there, right? And so, I think that it is legally different. I think he is also letting you know up front that it is a security that he's building.
Yeah.
But I do think that he's, you know, I think that part of the fervor for the products have been retail. And I think part of the fervor for the products I think the future of the product is to sell to people who don't get Bitcoin, who have money trapped in different parts of the financial ecosystem. But I think part of the fervor to get to where we have been has been support from retail and from people who wanted access really to the properties of spot Bitcoin. And then also got maybe accustomed to, you know, the rate of return on Bitcoin or the CAGR and are looking to outpace it. You know, maybe because, you know, they feel, okay, I have 10% in Bitcoin. What if I put another 10% of my wealth in? So I have savings and I have investment. And maybe they put another 10% into this other thing that they consider speculation. But I think it's...
Yeah, so the difference between investing, so saving, investing, and then gambling.
Yeah, right. And I think you can do all of that on Bitcoin, right? And I think, you know, and really? I think... Yeah, I mean, I think if you're 100% Bitcoin, I don't think you're just saving in Bitcoin. I think you're investing and speculating a bit on Bitcoin.
Right? Like, and I think some of these, like, MicroStrategy and some of these other sort of fiat products.
No, I'm saying if you personally, if you have 5 or 10% of your net worth in Bitcoin, you're saving in Bitcoin.
Right.
You're DCAing and build Bitcoin. If you have 10 to 50% in Bitcoin, I think you're investing in Bitcoin. If you have 51 to 99 or 100% in Bitcoin, I think you're you could say you're living on Bitcoin standard, but I think you're also speculating on Bitcoin. I think some people
are a little bit of a gamble, you think.
Right. Or trying to speed up the clock or retire early. Right. So it's not so much a savings plan as much as, you know, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that, concentrating your worth and your wealth early on to build wealth, I think is a good way to go about it. So I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, or, you know, trying to say it pejoratively, but I think you can use Bitcoin in a different way. But I think you could then say, okay, how much do I have in Bitcoin? How much do I have in Bitcoin treasury companies? How much do I have in AI? I mean, some of that is not just savings, that's speculating or investing.
Sure.
And so, you know, does living on a Bitcoin standard mean you're 100% in Bitcoin? Maybe you have a company that has fiat cash flows or fiat equity stakes. I mean, it's hard to be 100% Bitcoin.
Yeah, there's all sorts of different ways that you can hold Bitcoin and diversify. Yeah.
And you can also lever up. Can you be 150% Bitcoin? So, you know, but I think in the beginning, I think that these treasury companies have been getting a lot of their capital contributions from Bitcoiners and not from non-Bitcoiners.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I think you probably, I wonder how much of the Stretch marketplace is Bitcoiners storing cash like instruments and using Stretch instead of a money market versus right. pension funds.
Yeah. I don't know anybody with a pension fund.
No, but I'm saying any pension funds, are they investing in Stretch? Insurance companies invest, or is it strictly like a lot of people who are already buying spot Bitcoin and are Bitcoiners and are putting a little extra in these products instead of more Bitcoin or AI stocks or money market funds, you know, or is it actually attracting capital from trapped capital from non-Bitcoiners, you know?
Yeah. I think probably both, but
we'll see. Yeah, maybe both. I don't know. Let's move on to Square. Square brings lightning to 4 million merchants. Yeah, I want to talk about this. Will letting customers pay via lightning at 4 million Square merchants with fees waived through 2026 and instant USD conversion spark a wave of Bitcoin payment adoption, or will most businesses start auto converting to dollars and leave Bitcoin circular economy a work in progress?
I think this is awesome. First of all, you know, there's some people that are angry on Twitter. I don't know why they're always angry. But these things take time. And I think it's a huge step forward. You know, if you look at Steak and Shake as one of the first big adopters, they were initially converting all of their Bitcoin into fiat immediately. But we saw, you know, with the success and the support that they had, now they have ultimately pivoted and they're holding Bitcoin and they're growing a Bitcoin treasury. So that's fantastic. And I think you can really orange pill a lot of merchants and businesses one at a time. Similarly,
well, how's this going to work with taxes though? I mean, is anyone going to?
That's a nightmare.
So I could see why merchants would love this. I mean, there's less fees. There's no fees on this for a year.
That's huge.
You can even auto convert to dollars, so you can get the best of both worlds. You don't have payer fraud,
right? No chargebacks,
right? So I mean, but like, does that mean that I don't think Bitcoiners are going to go in necessarily? I mean, they're spending some money at Steak and Shake, but I think when you start talking about like maybe TVs and things that are at a higher price point, I just think people are not going to be as hungry to do that. And I don't know if the U.S. is ever going to make transactions.
An exemption.
I think that's the coup to, that's like the whole thing.
Yeah, a de minimis or whatever it's called.
That would be a start, but like moving towards treating Bitcoin as nice as the dollar and treating it like money, I don't think is going to happen by the U.S. government.
I think it's a little overly optimistic to think that that's going to happen.
Do you think Jack has insider knowledge, like, at his level with coming out of Twitter? And
he might. I mean, we know they were cooperating with the government for many years, you know, read the Twitter files. So maybe.
I mean, don't you think this would be like, well, I mean, I would think that the government would say, hey, you got to figure out all the accounting for this, the tax implications, because you're letting customers spend Bitcoin.
Yeah,
I would think I'm surprised they haven't put responsibility on to Square.
I think it could get really interesting. I think the more adoption of this that we see, the more interesting it's going to get. And that could be positive or negative. You know, we could end up forcing some sort of tax exemption, or we could see some sort of like Visa and MasterCard are known for suing people. And, you know, they really have government. Right. So it could get pretty wild. I think time will tell what comes out of this, but.
All right. You're watching Bitcoin Center, like, and subscribe. Let's go on to the lightning round.
We got topic five.
Oh, I got topic five. I'm always screwing that up. All right. You go.
There's an IMF debt alarm. With the IMF confirming global debt has quietly climbed to 100% of GDP, are we entering the gradually then suddenly phase of fiscal decline, where decades of abstract warnings finally translate into reality. And Bitcoin's case as a parallel system moves from theory to observation. How do you think this unfolds in real time? What do you think is going on here?
I think that they're just getting people comfortable with the debasement trade and inflation. I think that this is more about just getting people comfortable with the level of debt.
Yeah, which is high.
Which is high.
I mean, it's going parabolic.
Yeah, but you can inflate that away.
Yeah.
In nominal terms.
I don't know.
And I just think that they're really getting people comfortable with the fact that their money is inflating away. And I don't think we're going to get to hyperinflation necessarily anytime soon, but I think they have to get people comfortable with 3-4% inflation, and maybe even actually probably higher higher durable goods. But
did we lose you, Cedric? I was going to ask Cedric to give us like a quick 30-second explanation of the debasement trade. So we'll see if we get him back here. I don't know what that means. I know the IMF is an evil organization, so I'm going to talk about that till we get Cedric back. It is not an NGO. It is like an intergovernment agency. The International Monetary Fund. And so what Cedric was saying is it was interesting, and I would agree with the fact that they're just trying to get people comfortable with their money being worth less and less. You know, I disagree about hyperinflation. I think we're nearing a point of hyperinflation and that it's going to happen really fast. It's going to happen in our lifetimes. I mean, if you're here for the next 10, it could take 20 years, but I think it's less with the amount of money that they're going to print. There's no avoiding hyperinflation, right? You have to look at what has happened over and over and over everywhere else in the world. Look at the timeline in Venezuela and how quickly they went from one of the world's like leading economies to where they are now. I think we have a question in the chat.
No, I was just inviting people to leave questions in the chat.
Ah, okay. Let us know if you guys are still here and if you have any questions.
But here,
questions for Cedric. We got to get him back in here.
I pulled up a little definition of the debasement trade for you.
Oh, great. Okay, so let's see. What does this even say? Drives the debasement trade is an investing strategy focused on protecting wealth from the declining value of major currencies. All right, so they're definitely doing that due to government debt expansion, money printing. We know that they're doing all that. What does it look like? Like, what are they doing? You know what I mean? You know what? My have a debasement trade. Turn your dollars into Bitcoin. Governments are increasingly borrowing, expanding. Poor tactics. Let's look at that. On the sell side, investors reduce holding of government bonds. Yes. Don't hold bonds, obviously. On the buy side, they accumulate assets like gold, silver, crypto. By crypto, we mean Bitcoin, foreign stocks, real estate. Okay, so you hold assets. Paul talks about this a lot. I always think, you know, whatever that means. So basically, just trading your worthless fiat currency for assets makes sense. Everybody should be doing that, right? A lot of people are priced out of real estate is like traditionally one of the most common assets, and people are getting priced out of that. But I think we have Bitcoin. That's why we have Bitcoin. Cedric, you're back.
Yeah, I can't see you guys. Can you hear or see me?
You can see you. You're a little fuzzy, and we can hear you. I was just I was saying that I was going to ask you to help some of us understand the debasement trade, because Paul talks about this all the time. So we pulled up an explanation of the debasement trade, and it makes sense, right? You just sell the stuff that's declining in value and buy assets.
Yeah, but isn't it amazing how it's just like, and people are like, yeah, no, that's great. You see the game last night?
Oh, yeah.
Like, why are we even having a debasement trade?
Right. Like, it's unfortunate how many people just don't pay any attention. You would think
there'd be hyperinflation the moment any mainstream media talked about a debasement trade.
Yeah.
And people are just like, oh, it's okay. That's all right. You know, it's just, I guess I'll buy stuff that goes up.
What do you think is the timeline? You said that you don't think we see hyperinflation anytime soon, which I disagree with.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I think, certainly in our lifetimes, but I think less than 10 years. What do you think? Dollar can last that long? The way that,
I do. I think if they can get everybody to continue to price things in dollars, mm-hmm. and the key there is to price Bitcoin in dollars.
To keep it alive.
As long as you price Bitcoin in dollars, you keep dollars alive as a unit of account, and everything has to go through dollars.
Yeah. What about when they start pricing oil in Bitcoin? PetroBTC.
No, they're not going to price it in Bitcoin. They might settle it in Bitcoin.
Okay. But they're not going to have a ticker on the TV.
I don't know. I don't think so.
All right.
I think they want to make it a digital pet rock. They want all the Bitcoin to be in the ETFs or with treasury companies. And they're going to say, hey, look, that's nuclear grade money. You can't hold that. You'd be insane. And they'll start, especially with the value of Bitcoin going up. People hold a $100,000 coin. You can't hold a dollar coin. You can't hold a $10 million coin.
Fair enough.
No, you're going to trust
yourself. About price.
What?
It's an interesting point about pricing things.
And I still think they'll have something where they'll say something along the lines of like, all the MicroStrategy coins were hacked by North Korea last night. So our enemies now have, too many coins.
Right.
And you shouldn't hold your own coins because North Korea is going to take them. And
so as a major American, propaganda campaign.
Yeah, like sort of like a digital 6102.
Yeah.
You should keep them in the ETF. That's better for the country. It's better for you. And they'll recover the coins from North Korea because it was really, they took them on themselves.
Right.
And then they could backstop the price of the shares with fiat, which will make people feel like they backstopped Bitcoin.
I need the gift that's like, thanks, I hate it.
I think they'll also say, look, you keep your Fidelity, you keep your Bitcoin at Fidelity, you keep your Bitcoin at Bank of America. And this is where I got into a disagreement with Preston Pish about this. I still think this will happen. It'll be FDIC insured.
Well, SoFi said that in the clip that we played.
Well, so Preston was like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard because you can't fractionally reserve. You can't give them Bitcoin. No, but they can give you dollars.
Right.
So if Fidelity loses your Bitcoin, you'll get dollars.
Yep. They just said they were doing that at SoFi. So I think you've been proven right.
Well, SoFi, that was a little tricky. I think they were saying that your cash in your checking account would be FDIC insured before, up to $2 million, they said. But I don't think they were inferring that if you buy crypto or Bitcoin with it, that also is FDIC insured.
I don't know. But we'll see.
We will see. But I think that they will be able, they will try to insure those things with dollars.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that they will absolutely insure.
Right, they don't want Bitcoin circular economies. They just want you to like store value, debasement trade, not method of payment. That's why it's very interesting what Dorsey's doing.
Yeah.
Either he got a green light or he's a zealot. We'll see. All right, let's move on to the next one.
All right, now I think it's lightning round.
All right, well, there you go. All right, so I already started reading that, I think. Where are we? All right. Miners under pressure. So Bitcoin's hash rate hits record highs above 1.1 zettahash. Is that how you say it? and mining difficulty surged to an all-time peak, $156 trillion, even as prices and fees slumped, squeezing profits. Are we in a new down cycle for miners?
Well, there's always a cycle, right? I mean, I don't think that the four-year cycle is completely dead. Maybe it's less correlated to price. But in terms of like a cycle for hash rate, it's always going to be cyclical. And you've got to be
the
good.
Miners got to be, they're not getting ROI they expected by this point in the cycle.
They're not.
I think they were expecting this kind of hash rate, but with like prices double or triple this.
It's a tough industry, and you know, I think I love mining because you got to be smart. You got to be like, know what you're doing, right? It is not meant for everyone to survive.
Yeah, no, it's brutal. And yeah. We'll see how that goes. There's a lot of CapEx, a lot of leverage in that industry. So, but AI, I think, is kind of come to their support.
Yeah, all right, let's move on to the next one. It's merging. All right. So we've got Binance founder CZ says government officials are now calling crypto hard money behind closed doors. Is this a sign that Bitcoin's monetary framing is seeping into policy?
No. I don't want to spend any time on CZ and give him any air. I mean, I think he's an interesting character. He's lasted this long. He has built an empire, but I
think he's a scammer?
I do.
All right.
I don't think everything he says is necessarily wrong or a scam.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I wonder if it's a front for the Chinese government, the whole thing.
That could be. But you know, I was glad. I mean, the charges that they brought against him were nonsense, like not complying hard enough.
I agree.
So, all right. I'm glad we agree on that.
I was surprised he settled with them and even spent any time in U.S. soil in jail.
Yeah.
So I don't know. All right. But I don't want to give it too much air. Let's move on to the next one.
All right.
Ledgerize IPO. Ledger is reportedly preparing for a New York IPO amid booming hardware wallet sales. Can the not your keys, not your coins mantra win over public markets, or will investors shy from Bitcoin self-custody via volatility?
I think that all these Bitcoin and crypto companies we see that are IPOing, I think a lot of them are going to be successful, especially the ones that have underlying businesses, which Ledger does. So, you know.
Yeah, but what is Ledger's moat? What is their defense from other competitors coming into the hardware wallet business and, you know, eating some market share? I think it's interesting from another crypto company kind of, you know, going into TradFi and going into Wall Street, but right. I don't think they're a future unicorn.
Oh, no, definitely not. Agreed on that.
All right, let's move on.
Okay. YouTube's mega fraud. A Spanish crypto influencer's arrest for $300 million million-dollar fraud scheme sent shockwaves through the community. Could Bitcoin still suffer a major crash like the one we saw after FTX, or is the network too institutionalized now?
Bitcoin could still go through some major downward volatility, either at this point, price point, or a higher one. But I don't think that this is anything. This was like just a regular old Ponzi. Any attractive asset to lure and dupe unsuspecting investors.
Yeah, so, it takes something much bigger to crash, to make us crash the way we did, I think.
Yeah, and I think this is sort of tangential to Bitcoin. This is just, they were luring people on the internet to give up money, and they were never buying anything with it. So,
right.
Let's just move on from that one. UN launches Blockchain Academy. So the UN is scaling its blockchain education initiative for government officials worldwide. Could this top-down crypto literacy effort legitimize Bitcoin at the state level or dilute it into just another administrative tool?
Stupid. I think it's stupid. It's just stupid. And I think I neither. You know, like, people have formed opinions. And if they think it's for criminals, they're going to keep labeling it that way. And if they are going to believe that it's legitimate, then they, you know, they'll come to that when.
Yeah, but look at the organization behind blockchain,
right?
Crypto, stable coins. This is very disheartening. I think they have a lot. They have a much bigger soapbox than Bitcoiners right now.
They do.
About self-custody or anything like that. They're entered the conversation in a positive way, and they've completely usurped it. I'm not saying Bitcoiners are listening to this, but this is what is being sort of spoon-fed to the masses, I think.
Yeah, it's true. And a lot of Bitcoiners don't want to admit this, but, you know, we need to accept this and conquer it, because right now they're winning the narrative war.
Well, it seems like Bitcoiners are laying down the sword.
Yeah.
And just waiting for the eggs. I don't know. Let's move on to the next one here.
Jordy Visser.
We got more economic data. University of Michigan consumer confidence continues to collapse. This is the current conditions. We made new all-time lows. This is back to 1980. I just want to remind people, when you hear bubble talk, this is where we were just before the NASDAQ bubble peaked in 2000. This is where we were at the bottom of the great financial crisis. Here's where we are now, below that level, nowhere near that level. This is not a bubble. This is a K-shaped economy that is seeing profit margins go higher because the labor market is under pressure and because the adoption of AI is leading to more efficiency.
The crypto bubble. So Jordy, he argues that collapsing consumer confidence isn't proof of a bubble, but evidence of a divide. AI-driven economy. So far, if fears this high while profits and efficiency keep rising, are we witnessing the most misunderstood expansion in decades or the calm before a social breaking point? I don't know what he's saying, to be honest. We lose.
I think we did.
Oh, no. All right. I'm going to tell you guys what I think of Jordy Visser. Nothing. I don't think of him at all. I've never heard of this guy. It's something about this is not a bubble. I don't know.
Well, I missed the clip. Well, man.
You're back, Cedric. What do you think of Jordy Visser?
I mean, I like that IPO piece. I missed this clip that you guys just played. I didn't get to see it. I'm kind of curious because he seems to have some contrarian takes, and I think he's saying that the AI boom is real.
Yeah, this is not a bubble. I have to say, I've never heard of him. I just told everybody I don't even know who he is, so I don't really care what he's saying. But basically, I guess he's saying it's not a bubble, and AI is going to keep driving the economy, and something about some K-shaped chart.
Well, I think there might be a case that some of the equities we're seeing are in a bubble, but that AI will deliver, you know, down the road. And so that's, I think, the
deliver, you know, returns for people in dollars.
Sort of like, you know, the internet was in a bubble from 2000 to 2001, but like Amazon came through that and went on to massive gains after that.
Sure.
You know, and we still didn't have social media and everything after that. Social media came after that. So I still think that AI can deliver. I just don't think that we're going to see the returns on the CapEx being spent right now. I don't even think they can turn on. I don't think they have power for all the chips they're buying.
No, they don't.
And I think they're doing a lot of financial wizardry with lending and, you know,
Tweet? There was a tweet from these kids that raised like $2 billion and they were faking their AI. They were like manually transcribing. Did you see that?
Right. So when Google came out in like 1998, the smart money understood that an algorithm was going to take down Yahoo and, you know, become the search engine of the future. But it took like 4 to 6 years for the market to see that. And Google and Yahoo literally have like 50 people in a room, like writing down everything on the internet. Right. But they were spending, you know, they were worth billions and they were spending hundreds of millions on advertising. And it wasn't until 2005 that I think Google surpassed Yahoo in market cap.
Right.
You know, but the smart money knew Google would. But, you know, I'm sure the smart money bet on some Yahoo in the short term, too. My point is, maybe AI will deliver long term. I think we are in a bubble now. So let's move on to the next one. Oh, Lynn Alden. Let's see what you're gonna ask me about.
I think this one's yours.
Oh man, let me pull
it. I don't have this one. Nothing stops this train, I can tell you that.
Nothing stops this show. I mean, all my Lynn Alden connects 2025 repo turmoil to 2019 flashpoint. As the Fed's standing repo facility takes center stage again, Lynn Alden draws parallels to the 2019 liquidity crunch. Could this renewed dollar stress push more capital towards Bitcoin? Or is Bitcoin still just watching from the sidelines? What do you think?
Stops this train, Cedric.
Yeah, okay. When's the train going to get going? Meh.
It's on its way.
Everyone wants to know. Well, see, you know, I do, you know, everyone's expecting the big print. And
yeah.
That makes me worry that we're not going to get a big print.
Oh, we will.
Worry not being mean that we need or don't need, or I'm chiming in. I'm just saying that, like, maybe it's delayed. Maybe there's a lot of pain before the big print.
I don't know. I think. If they really do this $2,000 tariff thing, I mean, I think that is like gearing up to print. That's the only reason that they're even looking at that.
That's not a certainty though, is it?
It's not a certainty, but I bet it have. I think it happens. I think we just see a repeat of all the COVID nonsense.
I mean, Bitcoin went up like what, 4% on the news of a $2,000 stimulus check. And you know, what if they come out tomorrow and say, look, we can't do the stimulus check? I mean, Bitcoin could go down 8%, you know. I mean, and I'm not short-term trading here. I'm just saying,
right.
You know, and this could go on for another year or two. You know,
I don't know. I don't care about these little price movements.
And what if, you know, because I mean, I think they need to print probably like $15 trillion compared to what they've already done. So what if they need markets to really tank before, like, remember the printing last time came after a 50% drop in Bitcoin price when markets
that was a flash. I mean, it only dropped for 12 hours.
Yeah.
Well, drastically, right? I don't think they're going to allow that much pain in the market. You see all these clowns talking about the economy is doing great.
But if there's not that much pain, I think they print gently. I just don't think they're going to. I'm saying it's possible that we just don't get this big print right away. That's all I'm trying to say.
Slow and steady.
Or just slow and painful. And then really painful. Like, it has to be just so much pain before they can print that much. You can't print when all the markets are at all-time highs. I'm not saying you can't. I'm just saying I don't think
they're gonna. They can. And I think they will.
All right, let's move on.
All right. Okay, all right. This one is mine. Sailor launches euro-denominated instrument. MicroStrategy's launch of its first euro-denominated preferred stock, STRE, targets institutional demand abroad. But is this a clever capital raise or a quiet signal that Bitcoin's biggest corporate backer is eyeing European liquidity to fuel more Bitcoin buys?
I think it's both. I mean, obviously, it's a nice raise and they're going to see what market appetite there is for these products around the world. I think what this really is interesting is, does this threaten the Bitcoin treasury companies in Europe? So I think a big thesis is it going to be one major player in each capital market.
Right.
So the UK, Japan, etc. So Hong Kong. So does this destroy, you know, sort of the European based ones? Will they complement each other? Will Europe have an appetite for this? We'll see. I think they're just trying to see what sticks, you know. They're coming up with some great stuff, you know. We'll see. Let's move on to the next one here. Trump's vows crypto dominance for America. Trump proclaimed his focus on making America the global leader in cryptocurrency. But does an administration champion Bitcoin and pardoning industry figures like Justin Sun and CZ herald a true embrace of crypto's ethos, or will government-led dominance clash with the very decentralization that Bitcoin stands for? What do you think?
I would love for this to be true. I mean, Bitcoin, you know, is supposed to represent freedom. The United States is supposed to represent freedom. But there's a lot of problems happening everywhere. And I don't know that it really comes through with in the United States with like a government top-down situation. I think I'm more bullish on like things happening in El Salvador where they've sort of, you know, I mean, say whatever you want about El Salvador, but I think it's a better approach. I think saying we're going to accept Bitcoin, we're going to be a Bitcoin country, and then letting people build on top of that is a better approach to whatever Trump is trying to do.
Well, I mean, I think it's unfortunate in the sense that I think that certain political parties getting tied to Bitcoin. And
yeah.
I think that's a threat in the near term with elections and sort of the political pendulum. And I think the regime's sort of like take on Bitcoin has been much more about crypto. So this is with a crypto capital, with a stablecoin capital. They're going after Tornado. So it's not real freedom.
Right.
So I think we've been Trojan horse in a lot of ways on so many fronts.
Yeah, it really doesn't have anything to do with Bitcoin, you know. No.
And we're getting the opposite of the Bitcoin ethos here. So, all right, let's move on to the next one.
All right, Bitcoiners joke about farming after Bitcoin drops below 100K. After Bitcoin briefly plunges below six figures, Bitcoin and crypto traders flood social media with tongue-in-cheek memes about selling everything to buy farms in remote areas. Humor aside, though, does this viral exit to the farms trend reveal genuine burnout with the volatility or just the kind of cynical catharsis that signals a market bottom?
I think this is, I think the new luxury is going to be getting offline.
Totally. I couldn't agree more. Get yourself some chickens.
Yeah. And so I think that like Mike Alfred is just, he's bored, he's trolling, but I think that it really speaks to sort of, I think humanity is getting sick of the 24/7 burnout on things like X. And yeah. I think it speaks to that. I agree with that, Cedric. So I think it's like, yeah, like if I had all the money in the world, I'd buy a farm. And if I have no money, I'd buy a farm.
Right. You know? We're going to return to real life.
Yeah. I think that's what it's about. And so you could take any signal you want from it. The signal I get is that people are just sick of all the noise.
Yep. I agree with that. Disconnect your devices and get some chickens.
Yeah, that's one of the great reasons to buy spot Bitcoin, because you can just set it and forget it. You don't have to pay attention to the political machinations of the day. You know, you have to have a long view.
So. Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. That's the end of Lightning Round. You've been an awesome, you know, special guest host.
Thanks for having me, Cedric. Big shoes. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, Paul's a stud. Yeah. He's got all the macro takes.
Yeah, I don't know anything about all that, but I'm happy to join you anytime.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you back. I don't know, Francis, do we have any Q&A or comments from the gallery here? All right, HRourke-16S. Funny to me, Andrew Ross Sorkin is interviewing SoFi, and he just released the book titled 1929 about the Great Depression. Yeah, that's true. So that book, I haven't read that book by Andrew, but I mean, he's saying it feels like 1929. You know,
Yeah, I haven't read it either, but it sounds interesting. I might get a copy and read it. I think we're in a tough place and it's probably going to get worse.
I mean, think about all the optimism we had for the economy with a Trump win.
Right.
And how Murphy's Law means it's going to be like the worst economy ever.
Yeah. And it's tough. You know, I think for people, we talked about the debasement trade, whatever that really means. But for people with assets, people in the top 1%, the economy is doing great. Everything is soaring, right? But more and more people are priced out of that. We're seeing like the middle class done away with. And so more and more people are not living in that reality. They're living in more of like a Great Depression era.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was very not optimistic. Let's see. Well, coming up on the holidays, the government just opened, right?
Yeah. Oh, did they? Yay. Yeah.
You didn't know? I mean, I don't know if they opened, but they didn't they come
they
together
and agree? They would open.
Yeah, so it's opening.
Is maybe that your optimistic take at the end, Cedric? Because that's not optimistic.
Well, I was enjoying the government shutdown, but I think it is like, I think that had a chance of ruining the holidays.
All right, so back on track. We'll get the flights going again and we'll stabilize a little. I know a lot of people were suffering, and so, you know, I'm not going to root for that. But yeah.
You
know,
you can say all you want about maybe SNAP benefits, but if we're going to send $50 billion to Argentina and... you know, or you know, however, whenever we send money, it's like, well, if we're going to waste money like that, we could waste it on our own citizens from that perspective.
Right. I don't think we should be sending any money anywhere. So I, you know.
Right. I agree with you, but it's like sort of a spectrum of like, if we're going to waste money.
Right.
You know, we're already wasting money on other things. So why not our own people maybe? And I'm not saying it's a waste of money or not a waste of money. I'm not well-versed in the issue, but.
Sure.
But
we're going to have a happy Thanksgiving and a Merry Christmas.
Well, there you go. Maybe we'll get a government shutdown maybe next year. Maybe we can get all the things that that would have brought.
Root for that.
All right. Well, this has been brought to you by Bite Federal. This is Bitcoin Center. Go bank yourself. Right. Bite Federal ATMs, the crypto wallet, and the point of sale. I wonder... you know, maybe with the Square thing, maybe the point of sale for you guys will also take off. You know, I mean, hopefully more merchants will demand, put up Bitcoin preferred signs.
I think that would be great. It would be a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. Well, until then, we'll see you guys next week live at Tuesdays at 8 p.m.